The views and opinions expressed by the Should They Watch It podcast are those of two moms who happen to be a registered play therapist and a voice actor for cartoons. So while they may feel their opinions come from a knowledgeable place, they are still, in fact, just opinions. Should They Watch It? A podcast that takes the task of reviewing your kids' favorite shows off your to-do list. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Should They Watch It podcast. I'm Kara Edwards.
And I'm Laura Orr.
So excited about our special, special guest that we have coming all the way from down under.
Yes, we do. Nate Robinson is here to join us today. He is the co-host of the Not So Secret Dad Business podcast, where he talks about all aspects of fatherhood, men's mental health issues, and other men's issues. Welcome, Nate.
Thank you, Kara, Laura, how are you? It's great to be here.
We're so excited to have you.
Oh, mate, I'm really bloody excited myself. I've been itching for this for a long time.
Itchy all around.
Oh, yeah. hopefully this is going to be worth the scratch.
Oh, man. How could it not? Because today we are talking about Drop Dead Fred. But first, let's get to know you a little bit better, Nate, and introduce you to our listeners a little bit. Tell us about your podcast and what inspired you to create a podcast for dads.
Absolutely. Well, my name is Nate Newman. I was formerly Nate Robinson. I recently got married and took my wife's name. So that's
what?
Still in the process of being changed on all the podcast and all that sort of thing.
I wish you could see our faces right now. We're both just sitting here with our jaws wide open. I love hearing that you did that.
I do too, because I gotta say, my last name was less rhymey. And so I would have much preferred to have Jeremy, my husband, have taken my name, because I went from Laura Weiss to Laura Orr. And I gotta say, the rhyme does not roll off the tongue in a way that I want it to. Anyways.
See, in my first marriage, I ended up with a last name that I was always super cringy over. So even though my husband has a great last name now, when we got married, I was like, nah, I'm good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nah, I'm not changing my name. We actually all agreed that we would all just keep our last names, and we have more last names in our family because we have co-parents with other children and we like last names apparently because we keep them all.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But hearing that you changed your name to Newman is amazing, Nate Newman.
Yeah, what made you do that?
Okay, so basically, long story short, if you want to check it out, there is an episode on my podcast where I spoke with my wife about this. We met when she was 4 months pregnant, and we hit it off. 5 months later, I was in the delivery room helping her have a baby. So we'd only been dating 5 months at that point. Gave him my middle name because, again, being an early relationship, I didn't want to put my name on the birth certificate, especially with the fact that I'm not his biological father. And so as we progressed through our relationship, I wanted to have us more of a family. So as I've spoken on my podcast, I don't have the closest relationship with my father. It's not a legacy that I'm proud of. So I decided, one, I'll change it for that reason, so I'm not continuing that legacy. But on the other hand, it was also a logistical thing. It's easier to change one person's name than it is two.
That's amazing.
I figured I'd take my wife's name, and then that way we'd all be Newman instead of, having different names in the family.
That's beautiful.
And so can you tell me, in Australia, is it tradition to go the other way around like it is in the US?
Yeah, it is traditional.
Okay.
Normally the woman would take the man's name. But my wife and I are traditionally non-traditional. We like to have some of that sentimentality, but we still do things our own way.
Good for you. That's how everyone should do it. That's I always say, like, don't judge other people, man. They let them do their thing. No. Everyone has like good intentions at heart for the most part. So
no, that's right. That's right. And so becoming a dad was the reason I actually kicked off my podcast, Not So Secret Dad's Business. Because I found, being originally from Perth and then moving to Sydney, I don't really have a tight friends base here. And so I didn't have other dads to talk to about, infant stuff, how to handle babies, what to do. Hey, how are you guys dealing with work, balance, life, work-life balance and how are you guys helping out with the kids. I didn't have any of that. So I decided to start a podcast where I could speak to mums and dads and mental health professionals all over the world to just put it out into the ether so that there was a resource for other dads to be able to draw on it. And in the end, have the tough conversations so other dads don't have to.
I love that. I love that the mission is so great, because I feel like guys don't usually get a lot of opportunities to bond in that way.
Or support, if you think about it. Like,
no.
I would imagine that if you talk to most dads, they would say that, like, you know, there's so many resources for moms to go to, especially in those early years. And dads kind of, I know a lot of times, kind of feel like they're sitting on the sidelines watching a bond and not knowing, well, what am I supposed to be doing? How do I move forward? And yeah, when I know that was something for my husband when we got together, because I had such a strong network of parents that I was friends with. And then that was something that he hadn't had before. And that's been really special for him to like bond with, like you said, all these other dads, to have other men to talk to about the experience of parenting is very important.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've also found as well, I've heard stories of dads who have not been able to find that network. And so they've gone to mummy and me groups or the play groups at the library or whatever, and they've been stonewalled by the mothers.
I hate to hear that.
It's a mother's group, you know, and it's like, well, hang on, like let's take away the mother from parenting here and let's call it a parents group. You know what I mean? So that's my motivation behind doing that.
Do you think the reason, because I've been to a lot of, you know, parenting based meetups and things like that, and it is predominantly women. Do you think that has something to do with why men don't tend to show up, because they just don't feel comfortable?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've even used the parents' room at the local mall and been shot dirty looks by the mothers in there because I've had to take my child to the bathroom. I can't send him as well, especially when he was in diapers. I couldn't take him into the men's room because I'd be changing him on the floor. There's no facilities there in the men's room. So I'd be using the mother's room, the parents' room, sorry. But of course, that's already, you've already got mothers in there breastfeeding and taking care of toddlers and that sort of thing. So when a man walks in there, you get shot a lot of dirty looks and kind of like, why are you here? This is the mother's room. You shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Well, and then that's where moms shoot themselves in the foot, because the thing is we want our husbands and the fathers and men to be more involved in the process. So we've got to make sure that there's access to that and to be able to walk into a restroom or to be able to do whatever they need to do to participate in the parenting process. Like, that's one of the things I love about my husband, is he's very much involved and wants to be involved.
Yeah.
And I've got to give him the space to do so, or else that falls on me.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
I think the space to participate in child rearing has for so long been allocated to women. And I think this generation has done a really good job of creating space for men.
It has been changing
in a, you know, heterosexual couples relationship.
Yep.
And so I think that having that inclusivity is something that men want, women want. It's just catching up to or adjusting to that change, I think, is what you're experiencing.
And also families
too.
Look different. And sometimes families have two dads and you need that access. So
absolutely.
You know, that's everybody's different. And again, it just goes back to, everybody just be nice. Just be nice.
That's it. Just support each other. We're all in this giant thing called life together, you know? Mm-hmm. We're not doing it alone.
But I really like that you're normalizing and creating space for dads. I think even now, perinatal mental health in the mental health community is just now starting to create space for dads too, and recognize that dads also have postpartum depression. It just doesn't look the same as women who have postpartum depression,
because
theirs is largely hormonal, but theirs is largely experiential. And they're with that message that men receive is constantly to be support your wife through this. And so they, I think a lot of times men are asked to put their feelings to the side, which it's just another example of men being asked to put their feelings to the side. I think that you could probably relate to that pressure throughout your life, really, as a guy. Yep. And this is just another example of that. And so, yeah, I just love that. I love hearing of examples of where men are allowed to have community and talk about these kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there.
So now I'm really curious, now that I feel like we know a little bit about you. Drop Dead Fred. Drop Dead Fred.
What a classic.
So what made you choose Drop Dead Fred? Because we always allow our guests to choose what show or movie we're going to review when they come on our podcast. So I am so interested to hear what had made you choose this 1991 classic.
Yeah. Look, being here in Australia, a lot of Australian comedy is influenced by British comedy. So growing up, Rick Mayall was one of those comedians that really stood out to me because he is just so over the top with his delivery, with anything he does. You look at shows like Bottom or The Young Ones that he's done, you know, and even Drop Dead Fred. It's just everything is turned up to 11 with Rick. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, when he passed away, I was heartbroken because he just brought so much to Australian comedy through all the BBC and everything like that. So for me, watching this movie as a kid, I loved it because he was just so over the top and just the things he would come up with. You know, I thought it was great.
Yeah, he was bonkers. Can I ask you, how old were you when this came out?
Let's see, 1991, I would have been, I've got to do some math here, 7.
Same. Okay, so we're the same age. I was 7. How old were you, Kara?
I was going to say I would have been a little bit older in 1991 because now that also makes sense, but because before we started recording, Nate, you were saying that you grew up watching Dragon Ball Z, so I was like, automatically I knew I was going to be probably 9 years older than you. Which seems to be the case, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would have been, I mean, I graduated high school in 1995, so this would have been my like freshman year of high school when it came out.
Do you remember when it came out?
I don't. Okay. I never saw it. I do remember seeing the commercials for it on television. Yeah. And I remember seeing the posters and what have you.
Yeah.
I have no memory of having seen this movie. This was really, much like in past times when we get into a podcast where everybody has seen the movie and has the nostalgic element going on, I do not. I went into this just like completely wide-eyed. What am I getting myself into?
And that's just honestly, that's my favorite episodes is when Kara has not seen it. And me and a friend get together and you pick a movie that Kara hasn't seen that I did and have this nostalgic value. You know, I just love it.
And I get to put the 2022 glasses on to watch something that may not hold up the way it used to.
And I think that is super important, and I think that's why the past episodes where this has been the case have been super entertaining, to be honest with you. But, okay, so let's ask Nate first.
Mm-hmm.
Nate, should they watch it?
In my opinion, yes.
Yep.
I think it's a very good movie for the family to sit down and watch together.
Okay.
Because, you know, there are a lot of subject matter in that movie that can open up some really meaningful conversations down the line.
Okay, so then Laura, I will ask you next, should they watch it?
Do you have time? I actually don't know. I'm requesting that you ask me again at the end of this because I don't know. As a matter of taste, it's not my favorite, but I can see why people are attracted to it. And without like getting into what I like and what's problematic, I think what is problematic about this movie depends on who is watching it and how you're watching it. Because I think there's two ways to watch this movie. The first way is to watch it as something that is super symbolic, in which case I like it more. The other way is to watch it literally, in which case I like it much, much less. So at this point, I just don't really know where I land with Drop Dead Fred.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Kara.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Bring it. I'm sorry. Should they watch it?
Okay. So Laura, thankfully you gave me a little warning on this one. I tend to sit down with my son and watch everything that we review with him. So I get it through his eyes. Laura warned me, nope, don't do it this time. But things timed out to where the best time for me to watch it this time around was going to be with him. He also saw the name Drop Dead Fred, and he was like, there is not a universe where you are not watching this with me. Because he just thought it sounded so interesting. Mm-hmm. What I told him is, we're going to start this together. And when we hit a point where I'm uncomfortable, I'm going to turn it off.
Okay.
Boy, did that come fast.
Yeah.
Did we get there? I don't think we made it 20 minutes. We might have made it 15. And I will tell you the exact moment.
Tell me.
That I was like, and done. And thankfully, I saw it coming and I was able to hit stop before we got there.
Okay.
But it is the point in the movie, a little less than 20 minutes in, where Phoebe Cates has gone to stay with her mom.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Fred has joined us. He drops down on the ground and starts to scoot backwards, and I was like, oh, he's gonna look up her skirt, pause. And I caught it right before he looked up her dress, mom's dress, and I was like, sorry kiddo, we'll have to watch something else. And so we started watching next week's show, which we'll tell you about later. But I then when I went back and watched it, and of course he scoots under there and goes, eh, cobwebs. And I was like, oh, thank god I stopped it. I stopped it because
how did Michael feel about you stopping it? Was you he know, totally...
I think even he felt, because honestly, by that point, they had said so many curse words.
Yeah.
And that scene, he says the, in case there's children listening, B-I-T-C-H word many times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
That I was like, I think even he was like, yeah, I don't know that I should be watching this. So he was great. He didn't put up any arguments or anything. But okay, so the answer is, should they watch it? They being children, it, under today's 2022 glasses, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
What I'm also going to say is, in the first 30 minutes of this movie, I was like, I'm going to hate this movie. Like on an Ace Ventura level, I'm going to hate this movie. Uh-huh. And I have to say, by the end, I liked it much more than I expected.
Okay.
Do I want to see it again? No.
Okay.
No. But
fair enough.
What if we made a drinking game out of it?
Possibly. And if there was a which I want to talk about later, if there was a remake with the right things in place, I could get down with that.
Yeah, there's been talk of remakes several times and that just never came to fruition, because I think even the original creation of this movie, I read somewhere that once it had been completed, first of all, Tim Burton read the script and said, no way. Robin Williams read the script and said, no way.
Which I have thought about so much. I have thought about so much. What if it was Robin Williams?
Oh, really? Yeah.
That would have been amazing, but I think it would have taken the movie a completely different direction as well.
Completely.
But, I mean, it would have worked perfectly because Robin was so over the top as well. You know, so I think it would have worked.
And he had so much depth. Like, he would be so over the top, but his characters tended to have so many layers to them.
Yeah.
Which Rick also got to. It just took a minute to get there.
Yeah, and Robin Williams is big on improv, too. So what he would have done with that character, I think, would have been very, very different. And probably entertaining to watch, but I think he read the bones and was like, no. And then once it was done, the production company tried to sell it because they were like, we cannot stand behind this. but they released it anyways because they'd already done it and it became a cult classic. So, you know,
this
is where we are. Nate, do you want to talk about the premise of the movie?
Yeah, I can do that. So basically the whole premise of the movie is basically – our main character, Elizabeth, played by Phoebe Cates, she's a woman who's going through a divorce to a cheating husband. She ends up being moved back into her mother's home by her mother, comes, packs up her stuff and brings her home. And because she's back in her controlling mother's house, she ends up going back to a childhood coping mechanism and kind of reimagines her childhood imaginary friend in order to help her cope through these tough situations that she's going through, you know? So, for example, in the movie, she goes on her lunch break, and in that lunch break, she loses her husband, she loses her car, her purse gets stolen, she gets back to work, she gets fired. So all in an hour, her whole life falls apart. And so, yeah, she reimagines this character in order to help her cope and maybe use it as a bit of escapism to what her reality is at that time.
And when you were 7 watching this for the first time, did you pick up on any of that?
No. Absolutely not.
I was picking up on
stuff like, love is gross because love is about girls and girls are disgusting, you know?
Exactly.
And all the bad words and all the the booger smearing and the mud pies. And
I think what I remember is, because what's funny, Kara, is your son is the same age right now.
No, I know. That's what I'm sitting here thinking.
It's just so funny to think about what was allowed, honestly, when we were younger, because this was totally what all the kids in my class in school were watching. I feel like the boys watched it and enjoyed it a lot more and quoted it a lot more. But
yeah,
I think really, at least when I was a kid, what they loved the most is how Fred treated her mother, because the B-I-T-C-H word, all the time.
I mean, and deservedly so.
I just did not see that very much, and it just felt so
empowering.
Yeah, and I think they
stand up against the bad parents.
Yes, and I think that was something that, I don't know, what did you appreciate about it? Just like the funny booger jokes, Nate?
I loved everything about it, you know, like they're in the doctor's office. He meets up with all the other imaginary friends and they end up having a puking contest, you know, and they're all there pretending to throw up, you know.
Which at 7 is everything. My son just for Halloween, my son just went as a vomiting cow.
Yep.
Like literally, what do you want to be for Halloween? A cow. A cow? Yeah, a cow that vomits.
Yep.
Yep. Awesome. Okay. You know what? I think you and your son and myself could be best of friends.
Yes. And that's what I kept thinking when I after I had turned it off and I watched it on my own. Literally, if it. You know, the curse words didn't bother me with Michael, because we kind of have, he's very well spoken. He knows every bad word out there. And my rule with him is you're only allowed to use those at home. You can't use them at school or with other people. And you have to be contextually correct.
Okay.
As long as you say it correctly and in a way that makes sense to be using a curse word, then I'm totally fine with you cursing. And boy, does he at home. And then, but then remarkably, nobody at school or my mom, nobody else in our family has ever heard him curse. Like that's been our deal. So the curse words, whatever. Even the antics and stuff, he's a 7-year-old boy. He wants to slap his own booty and rub boogers on things. Like that's what he does.
That's what boys do.
That's what boys
Absolutely.
Do. And so,
girls. I mean, my kid's pretty
gross
too.
No question. No question. And so I wasn't bothered by that. Literally, the only thing that made me kind of be like, and I know we're jumping ahead when I say this, was the sexual element, just the looking up skirts. And he does it twice. And that was kind of my full stop on being comfortable with my 7-year-old watching it. Because I was like, Lord, I don't want to introduce that into his repertoire of pranks.
Yeah, look, that's understandable because, again, boys are very impressionable. And I remember even going back to 7-year-old me that was kind of something that wasn't quite so frowned upon back in the 80s and early 90s.
Right.
It was a boys will be boys kind of behavior.
Yeah, popping bras. And...
Yeah, and so now it's a completely different, a different social climate than what it used to be.
So I see teenagers in my practice, and so that still is there. It's just not celebrated as much in pop culture. But I will say that the problematic behavior that still exists today, there is an element of sexual humiliation for personal enjoyment that's still there. So I don't think it's funny now, you know, as we're trying to move away from that, knowing that it still exists. And I feel like the fact that he did it to these two women who are villains made it to where the creators kind of were trying to, they kind of knew that it was wrong, but they did it to these two villains. And so I felt like they were trying to convince us that it was okay, because he does it to her awful mother. And the other person he does it to is the mistress that her mother, that her husband is cheating with. And so I feel like even though they're doing that, I still have a problem with that, because the message is, now if you think that a woman isn't a good person, then you have the right to sexually humiliate her. And with revenge porn being really prevalent now, and with cell phones being able to capture women in very vulnerable ways, I don't think it's a great idea to hold this character in high regard when he's doing things like peeping up a woman's skirt and exclaiming cobwebs. And, you know.
Or vice versa, when he's under the young hot girl, his little eyeballs are like, well, you know. No panties.
And let me just say, cobwebs and no panties were the things that the boys were saying at school when they were quoting this movie.
Those
were the two standout scenes with all the boys.
Absolutely.
Even so much so, I recently watched it with my six-year-old. Again, I thought it was one of those things I should sit there with him and watch it. And like I said, it was good. I had that teachable moment where I had to stop the movie and go, now, look, that's what's happened in the movie. The movie is made up, but we don't go looking up girl skirts. It's not on, mate. Right. Like, it's just not cricket.
And you know what? I feel like because of who it is, and we've talked about this in past episodes, that when you have somebody who is as much of a character as he is, I do think that makes him less influential.
Yeah.
And impressionable on children, because he is so bizarre and everyone knows that. And so he does, in a way, get away with doing the crazy stuff that he does. When I say get away with, I mean, I think you're less likely to see children attempting to recreate that, because, like I said, the boys in my school were yelling cobwebs and no panties, but they were not looking under.
Yeah, they weren't falling to the ground.
Exactly. Yeah.
Scooting across the floor.
Yeah. And another one that jumped out at me this morning, actually, when I was having another rewatch of it, just so it's nice and fresh in my head, is that there is a scene where Elizabeth and Charles, they tend to get back together. They're back at the apartment and they are getting intimate on the couch. And you hear a zipper come undone, and Fred turns around and says, "You're not going to get that out, are you?"
That's right.
I never picked up on that until this morning when I watched it. And I was like, get out of town. How did they slip that in there? And I never noticed.
This sent me down an interesting path, because the movie is rated PG-13. And I was really interested, like, okay, why was this not rated R? Because of this, the sexual elements and the amount of cursing. And I found that when they're considering the rating, they're looking at the extremities of, adult content. Is there harsh profanity? Is there prolonged graphic or realistic violence, explicit sexual content, gratuitous drug use, or glorification of substance abuse? And honestly, there's not.
There's not.
I mean, there's little drips of sexual content in there, and there's obviously some profanity. But when I read it under that context, I was like, I guess it would be PG-13. But
and 7-year-olds were watching it.
7-year-olds were watching it.
Oh, I was going to say, and I think the reason they did that is, of course, when movies and shows are being made for kids, parents are watching it too. And so they put in those jokes that the adults are going to get and the kids aren't. And I think that's why that sexual element is there. It's meant to appeal to the adults. So then they're going to take their kids to the cinema when it came out, or or buy the DVD and sit there and watch it with the kids.
And there were just a lot more movies out there at that time too that were PG-13, but they felt like they were aiming at a younger audience, but they were like, but it's PG-13, it's got right. some risky stuff. You know, so, and I remember when those movies would come out, I would get super excited. I'd be like, oh, it's PG-13. Like,
they're going to probably say something bad.
But it's
oh, it's going to go down, baby.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's going to go down. It's like Ace Ventura. Like, are you really telling me that this Ace Ventura is made for a 13 to an up audience? No.
No.
This guy is just, he is very attractive to younger children. And mm-hmm. he was. Looks like a clown. It's a clown.
It's a clown. And that's what, at least for me, this was better than Ace Ventura. Because I feel like Ace Ventura was like, look at my butt. Look at my, like, I'm going to make terrible jokes. And I'm transphobic. Yeah. And there was a lot of phobics and misogyny. And there was so much in there without a redemptive ending.
He was celebrated a lot.
Yeah. Look, the Ace Venturas were have always been a favorite of mine as well. I love those over the top comedians. You know, Jim Carrey's up there with one of my favorites. But again, I don't think it's a matter of time. Like you could make that back then. Transphobic jokes were fine, but again, we're living in a totally different social climate, and I don't think that movie would ever make it past the writing process.
No way would that make it out today.
Not in 2022.
And that's what I think today's movies, we do have more of that. Like, they're obviously more socially conscious, but then it's not just going to be for no reason.
Right.
Like, we're going to get something. And that's what I did appreciate and was surprised by with this movie, is I was like, oh my God, is this just going to be a movie with like a Jim Carrey type of guy in here just making crude jokes the whole time? And it was like, oh, it was nice to even see him grow. Mm-hmm. And to see that, like, there might have been a reason for all of his antics. Mm-hmm. Just the whole mental health aspect was really nice. It was a nice surprise for me because, I was sitting there the whole time kind of with my arms crossed going, what does Laura get me into? Who is this Nate guy? What is this?
Oh, there's something wrong with this guy.
Right?
Stay in Australia, man. We don't need you here.
Australians and their choices. No, I love Australia, so I can't say anything.
Just some housekeeping stuff that we tend to get out of the way at the beginning. I'm just going to be that annoying person. And this is an hour and a half long movie.
Yep.
You can stream it on Google Play, Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Redbox, Vudu, and YouTube. I think we have we fully established who this audience is?
I mean honestly, we say this all the time, is you need to know your children. This is not a movie that I feel that my son would have been ready for. I think that there would come a time I wouldn't care about when he watched it. And it might be 13. I don't know. But I didn't find the place for it. I will say that at least here in the U.S., the majority of people agree, because it definitely has an 11% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh,
it is a 5.9 out of 10 on IMDb.
Oh, that's kind of high, actually.
Hey, but 5.9, that's the top percentage, the top 50%, right?
It's 2 out of 4 stars on Amazon Prime, so.
You know what, I'm starting to think that people just have no taste whatsoever.
Oh, what's that? those ratings definitely would have been higher in the 90s.
Though, oh, absolutely.
So beloved, but it's whether or not it has aged well, I think, is probably the question that they are answering.
Yeah, it's kind of aged like moldy cheese, hasn't it?
Yeah, a little
bit. Some parts of it, I think, other parts I think were compelling and interesting. Should we jump into what we like?
Sure. Okay. Well, let the two of you go, because I can honestly say I have one line written under my likes list, and I wrote, interesting journey through a childhood trauma.
Okay.
And that was that's my like list.
Concise, to the point, poignant. Nate, anything?
I thought it was what I liked about it was that although it is juvenile comedy and most parents are going to roll their eyes at it, they're going to see the deeper meaning in the story. Uh-huh. And like I said earlier, I think it's a good launching pad to be able to sit down with your kids and talk about your mental health and having healthy coping mechanisms.
Totally. I like, it's kind of punk, like, to me. I think Fred's outfit kind of reminded me of punk culture in many of the scenes, and his behavior is like anarchy personified. Mm-hmm. So I kind of liked the aesthetic that they brought to him. I kind of liked the, honestly, the overall dreamlike aesthetic of this movie, being just like, you never know what's going to happen. And some of it is like super bizarre when his face gets smashed in the fridge, you know,
yeah.
And then at the end, the dream sequence of her being in her house, but it's all Tim Burton. Like, I mean, I liked the overall look of this movie, so I appreciated watching it visually. It is definitely a cult classic. I think it has some funny moments, and kind of piggybacking on what you were saying, Nate, I do like the commentary about life in this movie, generally speaking, in mental health, this concept of hitting rock bottom in your life, if it's chaotic, you know, that process of hitting rock bottom is chaotic and life altering and sometimes necessary in order to pick up the pieces of your life. And so I liked that part of it. I also really liked Janie, played by Carrie Fisher.
Oh, I mean, what a great character. We all need that friend.
She is so Carrie Fisher in this movie too, which is the type of person I love seeing her as when she's in movies, is when she is just herself. She, that scene where she's exercising with a cigarette is just so beautiful.
Oh, she's waiting for the endorphins.
Ah, there we go. The aerobic
rush. I love
rush.
That one. One is super fun.
Carrie Fisher and Natasha Lyonne, I feel like, are very much themselves in movies, and I love that when I can watch it.
It was interesting. I read that there's in this scene where she just finds out that her houseboat has been sunk by Drop Dead Fred.
Yeah.
Apparently there's like a musical, something musical that is played that is actually from Star Wars. So there's even a little nod to her Star Wars career.
How
apparently.
Cool is that? Yeah, and it's quite funny as well. I never put my finger on the fact that it was Carrie Fisher until I dug this out of my DVD case and watched it again. And I went, whoa, that's Carrie Fisher.
That's Carrie Fisher.
So I thought it was really cool that there's two late great actors in one movie, you know?
Phoebe Cates and Bridget Fonda are both in this, and I loved both of them growing up so much. I watched Shag on the regular, and they were both in Shag. And so seeing them again, and I didn't remember Bridget Fonda being in this, so being able to see them together when I didn't put that together as a kid was super fun. So the cast is really
great. The cast is great. Yeah. Again, there were so many people that apparently had been offered the various roles, and I did a big deep dive on like, what would it have been like had like Winona Ryder actually taken the part as she was offered?
They really were trying to Tim Burton this movie.
They were definitely. And in fact, she didn't take it because she had been on such a string of playing like the weird, quirky character that she was like, I don't want to keep being typecast. But I mean, and even the role of Charles, people like Alec Baldwin, Jeff Goldblum, these were all people that were considered. And then
both would have been good choices.
Josh Brolin and Michael J. Fox were considered for Mickey.
Oh yeah, I could see Michael J. Fox as Mickey for sure.
I'm guessing probably not a big enough role at that point for him to take on. But
no,
the character of Mickey, I have to say, of all the characters in this movie, he bothered me the most.
He was your manic pixie dream boy.
Really? Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah.
I did not see him as the like, that's the man you should go and choose. I was like, oh my God, codependence coming through his pores. Like, run, girl, run. What is going on with this guy? He was so like the over niceness. Like, for real, you're on a date and the girl just starts randomly moving around and throwing food around the restaurant. And you're like, I'm so smitten. Like,
you're so quirky.
You're so quirky. And no matter what she did or what happened, he was just right there to be the Prince Charming. And for me, I was like, red flags, something's going on.
Yeah. I think they were trying to portray him as loving who she was from day one. her authentic true self and, you know, seeing past all of the weirdness or loving the weirdness, I guess.
I don't know. Yeah. I just saw problems. I did. Something's going on. He's recently divorced. He is way too into this. He needs to, like, I don't know.
I love it so much. That's brilliant. So did we want to talk about what's potentially problematic? Anything else that we haven't touched on yet?
Oh, I mean, I've got a list for you.
I was going to say you go on because I feel like I have hit all of mine.
Well, one that really jumped out at me was right at the beginning of the movie. The mother of this film is reading a fairy tale, a bedtime story. And the little girl playing Elizabeth as a child, she says, well, did they live happily ever after? And the mother said, of course they do. And again, it's a, why do you think that, mum? And she said, well, because if the princess is a naughty girl, the prince would leave. So I thought, well, hang on, what's that teaching, you know, this little girl? You know, how is she meant to see this? And then you kind of see it again later on in the movie, because of course Elizabeth's father left her mother, and her mother turns around and says, well, look, I only had you because I thought having a baby would save my marriage, but it's because of you that your father left. And she, you know, and I really think that's sending kids a bit of a messed up kind of message there. And realistically, we're living in 2022 where, you know, women are independent, strong, independent women. They, you know, I don't need no man. And I think that's a great thing to teach these young girls. But the fact that you turn around to your child as well and say, well, it's your fault that your father left, is just, it blows my mind. And then, of course, going along with that sort of theme as well, just the gaslighting right throughout the show, the movie with the husband. She's making a salad and he's in the other room talking to his mistress, you know, but he's still telling her how much he loves her and that she's crazy. And, hey, look, it was your decision that we split up. Remember, you said I should go and be with Annabella. Yep. And she's saying, did I say that? I don't remember saying that. He goes, yeah, it was your idea.
So here's the only reason that because I had written that down, your first line about when the mom is saying that about, you know, no, because the prince would leave you. And I was pausing and frantically typing. And then when I brought it back, because the little girl basically follows up with, like, that's a load of crap, except for she says a different word. But awesome. It was so that was quick so, that she so came cute. Back like, you're full of crap. And then same thing with the husband. We find that he's a bad guy. And even though the mom is saying these awful things to this little girl, we recognize, like, I feel like they did a good job of being like, she's a bad mom. Mm-hmm. She's abusive. Mm-hmm. She, you know, the husband is being a horrible human, and that's why I wasn't as bothered, because there was this whole redemptive arc where Phoebe Cates' character Elizabeth comes back and, like, finds herself and finds her confidence. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was super bothered by this whole concept of he was, like, feeding her pills so they could, like, be intimate. That super got under my skin.
But they were her antipsychotics.
I really was just, like, bothered by this. Like, here, sweetie, just take more pills.
It wasn't making her drowsy.
I know. Well, anyways. I mean, it just, that was where I was like, I hate that. I hate that. But again, there was all those cringy moments, but unlike other movies we've reviewed, I feel like they at least were cringy, but then there was something that came out of it.
Okay. There's some sort of redemptive quality in the movie at the end of it. You know, there's so much problematic stuff, but like you say, it all lines up to each other and teaches a lesson.
Yeah, and, right. and like a remarkable amount of cheating throughout the movie too. James cheating, dad's leaving, husband's cheating. Like, there was a lot of that.
Yeah, a lot. They don't make the guys look very good on this.
Nope. No, they don't. Like, and again, there's the scene in the houseboat where Carrie Fisher's character is having a clandestine affair with her boss. You know, she's like, and she's like, oh my God, Murray is such an animal. And she goes, what, he can go all night long? She goes, no, he craps in the corner and eats with his paws. What do you think I mean? And it's like, wow, I never picked up on that either.
Nope.
Literally one of my first notes, this is Mommy Dearest with a strange guy in green.
There was so
much Mommy Dearest vibes going on.
Yeah, there was. Just,
if they had pulled out some wire hangers, I'd have been straight up like...
Oh my God, can we review Mommy Dearest?
No, I never want to see that movie again. I think I was probably 7 when I watched it.
I think that would be a pretty quick episode as well. Should they watch it?
No.
I think people were saying no back then, to be honest with you.
Yes, that was the worst of the worst.
Think about it, though. And you let your kids watch that, they'll never go near their closet to get dressed again.
Right?
Oh, terrible. Oh. No.
Or they won't put makeup. Wasn't it when she wore makeup and then her mom got mad and cut her hair?
That
movie is so messed up, but I agree with you. I totally thought the exact same thing when
many Mommy Dearest vibes going on in this movie. No question.
She's straight up abusive. Every word that comes out of her mouth is horrifying.
Horrible.
Awful. Emotional abuse all
around. Okay, like when they think a burglar has broken in, it turns out it's Fred, but when they think a burglar has broken in their house, I actually got confused for a minute because I was like, wait a second, that is her mom. Why are they not worried about the daughter?
Yep, they are not.
They never go looking for the daughter. Neither the husband nor the wife.
Nope.
They never go looking for Elizabeth.
Nope, in fact, they never leave the bedroom.
Never. They call the police. They have a whole thing. At no point do they go, is our daughter okay?
Yep.
There's glass breaking and someone is in our house.
Yep. Yep. That was a whole awkward scene. The police... getting into the house,
super
the dad
awkward.
Attacking. That was so weird.
As we've brought up, the sexual innuendos, the mild coarse language, the depictions of infidelity, it's all there. It's almost like that original lesson that she was taught through that fairy tale was why she was settling for an abusive, narcissistic, and adulterous husband. Because she felt like, okay, well, he's doing this because it's my fault. I drove him to do this. So I have to be better. And I found that really problematic as well.
I found it compelling, too, at the same time, because I feel like I could see a person like Lizzie ending up with a person like Charles based on her childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where her mom has essentially blamed her for every problem that the family has ever had. And the dad is he kind of reinforces that by leaving. And apparently, I don't know if he ever comes back and checks on her. And so that is the message that she gets.
Yeah. She
I just have
narcissist.
To try my hardest to be as good as possible to keep this man. And if he leaves, it's because I'm not good. And so I can see somebody like that existing. I don't know if it's great TV,
but it's real life.
I mean, it is a thing. I think it's a topic of conversation that you might want to have with your kid, probably. Like, this, do you realize this is dysfunctional thinking?
Yeah.
And can I just, I mean, I could put my therapist hat on and go on a rant if you'd like to join me.
Why not?
Let's go.
Okay. I do like some of the general messages about mental health in here, but I do think that the details missed the mark. And so might I share some of those details
with
you?
Please
do. Go nuts.
Okay. Okay. So Lizzie, right? She starts off, there just seems some incongruence about what's going on with her. And I think if you take this literally, it feels very incongruent. Because she ends up having an imaginary friend at the beginning, which is super normal, but not treated that way, right? And then she grows up to have what I can only describe as a psychotic episode,
mm-hmm. right?
Which the two are not the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes on this like Jungian adventure at the end of the movie where she magically resolves her psychosis and her interpersonal dysfunction all in one session,
mm-hmm.
by like realizing that her toxic relationships are in part her doing because she doesn't want to be alone, which is what she says.
Mm-hmm.
So she frees herself in this very quick turnaround and lives happily ever after, no longer needing Fred. So I could buy into a psychotic episode in response to years of emotional abuse. But then Fred just kind of moves on to another child. So are we assuming that this child is also experiencing abuse like Lizzie did?
And if that's the case, then how is Mickey parenting his child?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Or are we to think that a lot of children have imaginary friends, and if they experience emotionally painful moments in life, they are at risk of those imaginary friends reemerging? Like, I just felt like the message of the lifetime transition of like the what Fred means felt inconsistent, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or what I was saying about Mickey all along was right, and there was red flags. Nobody's that nice.
She just moved from one weird relationship to another,
and his poor daughter needed Fred now.
OMG.
I may have just solved the whole puzzle.
Can I just point out, though, that although Mickey gets divorced, he has custody of his daughter. So is it another another issue of an abusive mother?
Yep.
Oh, that's an interesting point, too.
So, I mean, we need a sequel, apparently.
You know, there was an alternate ending to this movie.
Seriously?
Yeah, where they put Fred in the box and he was gone forever, and they test drove it with audiences, and the audiences didn't like it.
Oh.
They wanted Fred to continue. They had fallen in love with the character.
Yep.
And didn't like the thought of him gone forever. And so that's why they came back and had him go on, apparently, with Mickey's daughter, because that poor child.
So not much thought probably put into the
what does that actually mean. We just like make sure Fred goes on,
give the people what they want.
It could have been just a case of, we're at the end of the movie now, how do we tie this up as quickly as possible, because we do not have the time to be able to produce anymore.
For sure. And I think kids watching this, I don't think are going to pick up on that. Like, oh, poor little girl that Fred has moved into. She must have an awful life. It's like, yes, Fred is back.
Fred is living forever.
To torture babysitters.
Yeah.
I also don't like that imaginary friends are seen as something that needs to be medicated away.
Oh, yeah. In that doctor scene, I thought about you, because we have talked about this on past podcasts. Imaginary friends can be a valuable resource, and
Absolutely.
That it's not something to freak out about and go take your child straight to the therapist and medicate them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's just not going to happen, to be honest with you. So we see this whole waiting room of children waiting to see a psychiatrist so he can give them drugs to kill off their imaginary friends.
Giant green pills, apparently, that get rid of imaginary friends.
And so the implication is like, there is something truly wrong with you if you have one. And so if a kid's watching that, I think that message could easily be transferred to them.
Mm-hmm.
And also, maybe I should not tell my parents about my imaginary friend, because they might try to make that person
might try
go
to
away
drug me.
Yeah.
With through drugs. And anyways, it's just inaccurate. Imaginary friends are not indicative of a psychotic disorder. Psychotic disorders are not something that doctors imaginary friends are not something that doctors write prescriptions for. And children are not usually diagnosed with psychotic disorders. So it's just not really a thing. So that whole doctor scene was inaccurate. I'm just telling you guys right now. See, I know I'm getting nitpicky here. As a therapist, I was just watching it and I was like, oh, dear. But if we are taking this literally, adult Lizzie definitely needs medication.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that she goes to a pediatric psychiatrist to get that is very bizarre. And as a therapist watching this, literally, there were a lot of misconceptions about mental health and how people are treated. If you're hallucinating, you're likely to go somewhere inpatient until the hallucinations go away.
Mm-hmm.
Because antipsychotics are tricky and they're not perfect. And when a person is actively hallucinating, it's dangerous, mostly for the person hallucinating themselves, because they just aren't grounded in reality at all. So just giving them a bottle of pills and trusting that they're gonna take them is pretty silly. Like, it's just really hard for an actively psychotic person to acknowledge that they're hallucinating.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so it's hard for them to just agree to be compliant with their medications right away. So I think it's just something, you know, as a therapist, I noticed, and maybe not a lot of people would even notice that, but it is kind of spreading misinformation about mental health. If you know,
yeah, no question. If this movie were remade today, there would be so much that would have to be changed.
They would have to change that for sure.
And I mean, also in the late 80s and early 90s, there wasn't as much a bigger focus on mental health There was a massive stigma around mental health. And, you know, talking about a therapist would only be ever be done in hushed whispers and that sort of thing. So I'm not surprised that it is inaccurate, because nobody would have picked up on that anyhow. It wasn't something that was commonly talked about then.
Yeah, they probably would have a therapist on the writing, like on staff to consult with somebody if they were to remake this.
Oh, for sure.
Well, it also just depends on which direction they would go. Because like I said, you could take this very literally, or it could just be symbolic, in which case none of that stuff even really
matters.
But then
I think the movie loses its whole point if you just go with like, oh, okay, there's a drop dead Fred and this is all real. I think it takes away what actually does redeem this movie. I know Gene Siskel in 1991 called this the worst film of the year. what does actually make a person get through it is this kind of deeper meaning behind all the boogers and skirt peeping.
Yeah, look. It's definitely a boy movie, and that's why I remember it fondly, you know, because it does have all that gross snot flicking. And like, I mean, when I was a kid, I thought it was hilarious. He flicks the snot and it goes right in mum's cup of tea. You know,
oh, right.
And then she's like, did you make this for me, Lizzie? And takes a sip of the tea and I'm like, you drank Fred's snot.
Sure did. I know. There is so much that is attractive about this movie for young kids. And I think a lot of the stuff that we have seen as problematic is just because we are speaking about it through the lens of an adult.
Yep.
And kids would not even see this stuff.
An adult at a different time.
Truly, truly.
I think it's a great movie. I think, you know, it would be a good one for the kids to watch, but with parental discretion.
For sure, with your parents, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, like if we haven't scared you away from this movie yet as a parent, at least sit down and watch it yourself first before you decide whether it's appropriate for your kids. Because like you've said earlier, you've got to take your own kids into account here and what they are used to seeing, what they are used to consuming. You know, there are some families that are a little more lax on things and other families are a little more strict. So,
and you know, you also have like a fast forward button. And that's something I thought about as much as my son was like, I want to watch a movie called Drop Dead Fred. If he were to continue pestering me, this is one now that I know the ending and I know where we're going with the whole thing. I could fast forward past the parts that I wouldn't want him seeing.
Yeah.
And then again, there was just a couple of those. So, you know, you do have the control here.
As it comes, in my opinion, comes to viewing itself, there are really only one or two scenes where I think, the kids shouldn't watch it. But for the most part, I think it's fairly harmless. I mean, especially the fact that I'm thinking of it from my childhood and now also as an adult, I could see both sides, both perspectives.
I think you're right, Nate. And I think I am going to change my answer to yes. It was, I don't know. I think I'm going to say yes. There's a, so I have a book that I read to some of my kids about like what is appropriate and inappropriate touching.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And in the book, I always ask the parents, you know, is there any part of the book that you don't want me to read to them when we're having our session? So I'll let them look over the book. And if they don't like particular parts of the book and they would rather I skip over it, I just paperclip that part. And so it's closed together and then we just skip it. So I think that you could do that with this movie.
Yeah.
If you wanted to.
Totally.
Just paperclip it.
Just fast forward. Just a little bump. Just give it a little bump. Get past the skirts and you'll be fine.
Yeah, really, because that really is the part that, the only part. I think the rest of it's
Fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah. And again, we talk about so often that when we look back at the stuff that we watched when we were young, I mean, you guys watched this when you were seven.
Yep.
And you're okay and you're contributing citizens.
Yep. I have yet to peep up someone's skirt.
Right.
Like, that didn't consent.
Your kids are going to be okay. And at least with this one versus other shows, again, there is some redeeming qualities to it and can open up some great discussions.
Yeah, and I think that's the important part there.
Laura can't believe I found anything good in this.
I really thought Kara had brought some her pitchfork and her torch. I thought she was ready to.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm remaining a no.
Okay. But... Oh, that's true. That's true.
But
you're a nice no.
I'm a nice no. A nice, I'm not an angry no. No.
That's true.
Yeah.
Better than Ninja Turtles then?
I mean, as far as watchability, I would say better than Ninja Turtles. Okay. I was, yeah.
Wow.
That movie didn't get me at all.
I did not expect that.
You know, I'm full of surprises, Nate.
We are equally perplexed. Nate, it was so lovely to have you on our show. Thank you so much for being here and bringing us this cult classic of a movie.
I'm glad that I could bring it to you. I was interested to see what your opinions would be from a, you know, a therapist point of view, and also somebody that works in the entertainment industry as well. So I thought it was really interesting. I've had a blast.
Absolutely. So where can people find you, and what would you like to promote while you're here?
Well, you can find Not So Secret Dad's Business all over the streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, all the main platforms. We do have a page on Facebook, Not So Secret Dad's Business. I tend to share stuff from my episodes on the socials there. We've also got a public group, so if anybody wants to check that out and get involved and, expand on their views, or maybe give parental advice from their own point of view, or just throw in some dad jokes and a bit of banter, that's there as well.
Love it.
But, we're currently on a bit of a hiatus as well. I mean, my personal life has hit a bit of a speed hump, and so I've had to take some time away from the podcast, but we will hopefully be back very soon and bring in some interesting stuff, because I've got my co-host Judge. I call him my foul mouth chucklehead. So if you are adverse to a little foul language, my show may not be the best for you. But I also do release quite a few guest episodes. I've had you on the show, Laura.
Yep.
Talking about play therapy and that sort of thing. So there is some really good educational, informational stuff there as well. So, if you want to check it out, just search Not So Secret Dad's Business wherever you stream your podcasts.
Amazing. Will do. And everyone, thank you so much for hanging out with us for this incredible journey that is Drop Dead Fred. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, through our website. We love to hear from you, and we super appreciate your reviews and 5 stars when you get them. So next week, we are going to be talking about Mighty Ducks.
Quack, quack.
Yeah,
the
quack,
show.
Quack, quack. The new TV show. Not so new. They're in their second season, but we will be talking about the TV show that you can find on Disney if you want to watch it ahead of time, and then join us on our journey through Duckland.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Thanks, Nate.
Thank you.
Subscribe and follow us on Instagram.